You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
No one questions the quality of the writing. Shakespeare's plays are universally considered to be the greatest in the English language. It's the man who's become a subject of doubt. Could someone with Shakespeare's background have written those brilliant plays? Over the centuries, there have been many non-believers, including Freud, Helen Keller, Henry James, and Malcolm X. James Shapiro addresses the controversy in his latest book, Contested Will, published by Simon & Schuster. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show today. Hi.
Oh, it's great to see you again.
But how do I know you wrote this book and not some brilliant English nobleman who may not wish to be identified?
I have a confession to make. I didn't grow up in England. I'm not Christian and don't know the culture. Grew up in Brooklyn. I never took a college course on Shakespeare. The true author of this book is an extremely shy writer. Doesn't like to go on radio, TV, that kind of stuff, and has asked me to step forward and take credit, and I'm happy to do that.
Well, I'm pleased that you decided to come by. But is this, I haven't read this about other people who could also be questioned. Why isn't anybody questioned whether Chaucer wrote all of his tales or how Mozart could, as a child, write that brilliant music and then be so prolific without outside help?
There are a couple of answers, none of them really quite good enough. One is we all write a little bit, and that helps explain why we can think about writing rather than, say, music or a painting and the like. None of us could paint as well as Michelangelo. I think Shakespeare is at the center of our literary culture, and that's the football everybody wants to grab and run with. Chaucer doesn't write, Milton doesn't write, but if you could take Shakespeare away and move him in the direction you want, you've really changed the storyline.
Is it also that we think of music like math and some other things as innate talents, whereas with writing we assume that you just have to acquire the skill?
It's not just the skill. We now live in an age where everybody's writing a memoir. 10 years ago, everybody was writing a novel.
Well, we all have spell checks, so at least we know we're going to get the spelling right.
And each of us has a story, so why not?
How much of this question arises out of British class consciousness, do you think?
You know, that used to be the argument. And when I began this book 5 years ago, I thought, I'll take what everybody said and park it on the side, go back and look at it fresh. I don't really think it's about social class, although people in England still insist that it is. Until 150 years ago, no one thought that anyone but Shakespeare wrote the plays and poems attributed to him. So I began to think, what changed in the mid-19th century that made people begin to say somebody else must have written them?
But don't most people who study or teach Shakespeare tend to stay away from this debate?
Everyone stays away from it the first day of class. There's always a kid in the back who raises his hand and says, did Shakespeare write it, or did Bacon or Marlowe or the Earl of Oxford? And you summon all your authority and say, we're not going to talk about that. But I was in a local school on the Upper West Side teaching 11-year-olds how to read Shakespeare sonnets. And at the end I said, anybody have any questions? And a kid on my left said, my brother told me that Shakespeare didn't write Romeo and Juliet. Did he do it? And I realized that same kind of authority that I use in a college classroom doesn't wash with an 11-year-old.
Is part of the problem that we don't have many things from Shakespeare other than the plays? We don't have any letters. We don't have any notes.
You know, we have a lot of information about him. It's just not the information we want. We want to know what his inner life was like. Was he a good husband? What was his writing process like? What kind of father was he? When his daughter Judith died in 1662, a half century after Shakespeare himself had died, with her death was the end of the possibility of knowing what the inner life or the family life of this man was like. And after that, people just despair of information that they really want to have.
You mentioned that the nobody questioned his authorship during his lifetime. And although we do know a lot more about other people, prominent people from that time, what happened 200 years ago?
In the
200 years after his death,
yeah,
isn't it?
1840s, 1850s, a couple of things happened. One thing that happened was people began to read literature as confessional, as autobiographical. So people began to search for the life in the works, and they began to find other lives rather than Shakespeare's. And with 1,200 or so characters, it's a nice a la carte menu. You can find somebody's life. The other thing that happened was Homer was dethroned. People realized the great poet of the Iliad and the Odyssey was not one man, was really over three centuries, a number of writers or redactors. And then I think
the Bible was
the Bible was huge. Somebody came along and said, or some lots of scholars began to question whether the gospel were the gospel truth. You knock off Homer, you knock off Jesus, and people began to say Shakespeare's next, and he was.
So, but originally, I think somebody proposed it as a joke.
There was a man who I never heard of before when I began writing this, a young Lutheran named Schmucker, who lived in Pennsylvania and wrote as a kind of riposte to arguments against skeptics about Jesus and the Gospels, made up a story saying, well, you can do it with Shakespeare as well. And that's really the playbook of all the skeptics or anti-Stratfordians ever since.
And then there was James Wilmot.
One of the things that shocked me, if you go to Wikipedia or the Dictionary of National Biography, the earliest dated skeptic was a man named James Wilmot in 1785, who argued that Francis Bacon wrote it. One of the discoveries I made in writing this book was that's a forgery. This whole story is filled with forgeries and made up bits and pieces, and you have to tread cautiously while exploring this authorship
question. So who made up this forgery?
No one quite knows, and I brought in paper experts. I'm going to bring in handwriting experts, whether it's an American or a Brit. If you can say that it was Bacon or Oxford or somebody else, the reason I knew this was because the document dating from 1785 accused Shakespeare of being a malt dealer and a moneylender, which he was. But nobody knew that until 1850. So to have in your forged document references to things that people would only discover decades later was a dead giveaway.
Have other candidates been proposed over the years? Or is it pretty much the same group?
No, there are 50 or 60 candidates. Even in the time I was writing this book, four new candidates came up, an Irish rebel, an English diplomat, an English Jewess. I mean, anybody you can imagine has been proposed.
Although the first person to argue in favor of Francis Bacon was herself named Bacon.
Delia Bacon was really an extraordinary woman. She was a lecturer and a writer and often dismissed as a madwoman. She's one of the heroines of my book, although towards the end of her life, for various complicated reasons, she became fixated with the idea that Shakespeare wasn't Shakespeare and that Francis Bacon had written the plays.
And that's and she was given a lot of credence because she was an American, and this kind of scholarship would be on the par with what we were seeing from Britain?
Well, people who were very important, Carlyle, Nathaniel Hawthorne, Emerson, corresponded with her, met with her. They found her charismatic and brilliant. They just said, give us the evidence. And there was no evidence.
My guest is James Shapiro. His latest book is Contested Will, Who Wrote Shakespeare. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Has anyone analyzed why Freud would have felt compelled to speak out about whether Shakespeare was Shakespeare?
You know, one of the say it ain't so Shoeless Joe moments in this book was discovering not only that Freud late in his life decided somebody else had written the plays attributed to Shakespeare and he thought it was the Earl of Oxford, but how connected this was to his theories about the Oedipal conflict and the like. And Freud had to decide either his Oedipal theories were right or, since part of the argument sustaining them had to do with his reading of Hamlet as a work written in a kind of Oedipal crisis after the death of his father, he had to decide whether somebody else wrote the plays. Once he knew that Shakespeare didn't write Hamlet after the death of his father, he threw Shakespeare overboard rather than throwing his theories overboard.
And I had a teacher in high school who taught Hamlet as an Oedipal story. So this is something that lasted for quite a while.
You can read an awful lot into Shakespeare. Shakespeare's plays have the capacity to not only withstand skeptics, but withstand any kind of theory you could throw at him.
And you tell a story where Freud questioned one of his patients, Smiley Blanton, during a session about his feelings regarding the authorship of Shakespeare's plays. Brings it up? Freud brings it up.
You're 4 months into therapy with Sigmund Freud, and he leans over and he asks you, do you think Shakespeare wrote Shakespeare? And Smiley Blanton, who actually went to Harvard, studied literature, became an actor for a while before becoming a doctor and going to analysis, said, absolutely. And Freud pushes over a book and says, read this. And poor Smiley leaves, joins his wife in a cafe and says, I can't go on if I think my analyst is a crank. You read this for me.
Well, he could have charged Freud for the session.
He loved Freud. They corresponded for years after this on the authorship question.
Did Freud write about Hamlet?
Freud wrote about Hamlet, and Freud was convinced that Hamlet experienced very much the same Oedipal crisis that Shakespeare experienced, and not coincidentally, Freud himself went through.
Why would someone like Helen Keller identify, have questioned whether Shakespeare wrote Shakespeare?
Another really extraordinary moment in my research was going over to the American Foundation for the Blind across town and discovering that there's a manuscript in hand typed by, touch typed by Helen Keller, arguing that Francis Bacon had written the plays. And she was close friends with Mark Twain, who was another skeptic and thought that Bacon wrote the plays, or most likely did, and Shakespeare couldn't have written them. There's a lot of, there are a lot of very smart people thinking very dumb things, and among them, Henry James, Helen Keller, Freud.
You mentioned Malcolm X was a skeptic, but you don't go into his ideas about the
subject. Malcolm X was a little confused on the topic. I imagine Justices Scalia and Stevens, who are both currently on the High Court, Supreme Court, are both anti-Stratfordians. And so it doesn't really stop with just literary figures, lawyers, judges, and the rest.
Was Malcolm X just being literary at this point, or did he have some kind of political agenda?
He was
here?
A little ornery about it. He thought that because Shakespeare wasn't involved in the writing of the King James Bible, he was necessarily the greatest writer of the day, that there has to be some other explanation for who could have written the plays.
So many of the candidates also are rumored to be either illegitimate offspring or lovers of Queen Elizabeth I, the Virgin Queen.
You know, we can smile about this, but Roland Emmerich, the disaster filmmaker who most recently did 2012, 10,000 BC, The Patriot, he's now shooting a film called Anonymous, and it's going to argue that Queen Elizabeth was a bastard, gave birth to the Earl of Oxford. When he came of age, had sex with him, they had a child named the Earl of Southampton, and this explains why Shakespeare could not have written the plays, but the Earl of Oxford did. And I can tell you, a year from now when this film comes out, kids are going to be going into class and saying, "Miss Jones, I just saw the movie. Why are you telling me that Elizabeth was a virgin queen and that Shakespeare wrote the play? Shakespeare was illiterate." It's going to be a disaster movie for anybody who teaches English.
And we'll have a new play called The Earl of Oxford in Love, right?
I hope not.
The internet, I'm sure, has expanded this controversy. After all, there are so many conspiracy theories already afoot in the internet.
You know, the authorship question almost died in the 1970s. And I suppose if Al Gore hadn't discovered the internet for another decade or two, it would have died. But the internet is this great breeding ground of conspiracy thinking. And it has done wonders for the authorship controversy.
Well, if Anonymous is made into a film, are you hoping that your book will be optioned for a movie by James Cameron or Ridley Scott, perhaps in 3D?
I would hope that this controversy goes away. I don't know if this is the silver cross that one stabs into the heart of it, but I've given it my best shot.
And I'm assuming that one of the reasons you still believe it's Shakespeare is that you spent 15 years writing another book we've discussed in the past, A Year in the Life of William Shakespeare. Were you able to come up with enough information about him to convince yourself that he probably did write the plays?
Not only to convince myself, but I thought to convince anyone. And I wanted to move on. These books, as you know, we see each other infrequently because they take me 10 or 15 years to write sometimes. And I wanted to turn to the next book, the year that Shakespeare wrote King Lear and Macbeth. And I'm hoping you'll have me on in 10 years when I finish that book. But I realized that
Are those plays worth discussing?
I hope so. I hope they'll still be worth discussing. But I thought I need to stop and tackle this controversy because what was implicit in my book on 1599 is really explicit. This is more polemical than I'd like to be. I don't have that many books left in me, but I felt this was a time to tackle this question.
Now, James, you realize you're not going to put this whole controversy to rest with this book, as convincing as you are.
You know, I want to make it easier for every teacher who doesn't have the time and fellowships and access to archives that I've had to be able to answer these questions. It's not just teachers, spouses who have husbands and wives haranguing them about this question, or bridge partners. This book, especially the last 50 or 60 pages or so where I set out the incontrovertible evidence for Shakespeare, I hope will be the most photocopied pages of any Shakespeare book.
James Shapiro is the Larry Miller Professor of English and Comparative Literature at Columbia University, where he has taught since 1985, the author of several books, including, most recently, A Year in the Life of William Shakespeare, 1599. This one is called Contested Well, Who Wrote Shakespeare? It is published by Simon & Schuster, and I want to thank you so much for being with us.
It was fun. Always good seeing you.